I've been here for the past 2 weeks talking about some of issues in daily life and the resources of our Christian faith, the treasure in the earthen vessels, namely, to deal with and respond to those issues. This topic grows out of, and I hope builds upon, some earlier sessions, one led by Carol Tomer yesterday, and then the forum last night, where we talked about busy lives and busy work, or do we work to live or live to work? This is a difficult session, and perhaps as we try to deal with some of the positives and the negatives, if we can take an extra special measure to try to be concise when we make our comments so that other people have a chance to also speak, because we want to engender as much discussion as possible. There are a couple books that are in the bookstore. I just want to point them out. I think there's one more copy of this book. There were lots, and it's nice to see that it has been used. It's 100 Predictions for the Baby Boom, which talks about most of us in this room and about the demographic and economic forces that shape our life, and we'll be using that later. The author is Cheryl Russell, who is the editor of a magazine called American Demographics. It's one of the most provocative books that I've read in the last year or so. And then an older book, and the woman is a Lutheran pastor. There's two authors, Raines and Day Lauer. It's Modern Work and Human Meaning, and we'll talk a little bit more about that later in the week. It's a very, I think, profound book, and it's based upon some case studies of workers. There's two other books that I don't have with me. One is Bill Diehl's book, In Search of Faithfulness. It's a black book.
It's spelled D-I-E-H-L.
Yeah. And that's in there. And then also a very troubling book, but one that some of you may want to pick up, is Robert Cole's Harvard Diary. Some of you may remember Cole's has done a lot of work with, he's a child psychologist, and done a lot of work with poor children and rich children and forces. And this is just his diary, talking about many of the issues of faith and daily life, and how does one relate those. It's
Cole,
C-O-L-E-S. C-O-L-E-S. It's in the books that are on the table as you come in for the courses. No, they're on the they're in the bookstore. There's two tables for those books that are being used in the courses, and all four books that I just mentioned are on the table together. And I'll pass around New Ministries. This is an organization that I've been involved with in the last 8 or 9 years, and there's an article about Bill Diehl on the front and also a review of his book on the back. Please take a copy if you'd like one, and if you'd like to continue getting New Ministries at no obligation, just put your name and address on that. And I'll start that around. And if I could keep my pen, that would be great. Get it back. All right. Well, I'd like to do is, yesterday in Carol's session, we talked a little bit about the situation that finds us feeling as though we're torn between our personal lives and our work lives, and that leads us to have a frenetic lifestyle. What I'd like to do is read the conclusion of Cheryl Russell's book. It's a rather long excerpt, but I think you'll find it helpful in giving us some, on this very big topic, give us some turf to deal with. The new rules of economic life drive America's future. The two-earner family is more important to predictions about what will happen to the baby boom than any other factor, except the inevitable, inexorable aging of the generation. The two-earner family shapes the baby boom's work life, its home life, and even its psychological well-being. The more money a wife makes relative to her husband, the more housework her husband does. As women take on the responsibilities of providing for their families, men shoulder more responsibilities at home. This is a fact of baby boom life. Yet both women and men feel guilty about it because they live differently from their parents. Men wonder why they don't earn as much money as their fathers. Women wonder why their husbands can't support them like their fathers supported their mothers. Men wonder why their wives don't keep house like their mothers. Women wonder why they have such a hard time keeping up with the housework when their mothers made it look so easy. Some baby boomers feel like failures. Few realize the way they live is not a choice, but an adaptation to a transformed American economy. The baby boomers enthusiastically adopted the new rules. Now some find they are victims of the rules. Men and women want opportunity, but they also want simplicity. Unfortunately, only a few baby boomers will have both. The handful of baby boom men who can command exorbitant salaries will be able to live the 1950s lifestyle. Their wives will work only if they want to. In contrast, most baby boom women will have to work just as most baby boom men must work. Some things are predictable because what people do at certain ages is predictable. In middle age, people spend money. Today, society condemns the baby boomers for spending too much money and saving too little. But the generation is guilty only of needing too much. It needs houses, appliances, furniture, cars, work clothes, and so on. In a few decades, the generation will have most of what it wants, and it will begin to save money. Then society will accuse the baby boom of being too tight with the purse strings. Well, again, just to set some of the parameters, what we'd like to do is take some time now to talk with you. This is Cheryl Russell's view of the contemporary American family and its relationship to work. What we'd like to do now is find out what your experiences are and what your views are.
We're going to do some definitions. We would like folks to just call out some descriptions of work and also descriptions of family, either one. And we're going to put them in one side or the other and see what we come up with.
No right answers. Feelings, descriptions, thoughts that come to your mind on either.
No wrong answers either. What's a good way to describe work?
9 to 5.
Source of income.
Yeah. Pardon?
Source of income.
Income.
Routine.
Creative.
Survival.
Deadline.
Challenge.
Service. Identity.
Identity.
Contacts.
People.
Okay. Lifestyle.
How so?
Well, probably who you see and where you live is determined by what your work is, what your job is.
Stress. Good. How did we get this far without stress?
Maybe community.
Well, we got one side of the room that's going great blazes, and the other side's really quiet. Is this the family side?
This is the
family. Anything else?
Monotony.
Did you say that, Rachel?
Which side?
Yeah, which side?
You want to volunteer where you work, Rachel?
I work at Baskin Robbins.
This is our 17-year-old. Anybody else?
Friendships,
okay.
Stimulating.
Competition. It could be cooperation, too.
Profit.
I liked his other word too, cooperation.
It's there.
Oh, is it there? Okay, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm.
I can't find it anymore. I don't think it is.
I think work is something that takes me away from my work.
The place away from home that you go to so that when you do go home, you're glad to get there.
Or it's the other way around.
We had friends at one church we lived at where they had twins unexpectedly, and one day when they were a couple weeks old, he was at work, and he worked in a school, I think he was a principal. He was sort of drooped over his desk, and one of his co-workers said, "Why don't you go home? You need some rest." And he said, "Please don't send me home."
Maybe addiction should go under work too.
Addiction. Yes.
Demanding.
Do we have that one? I've got a good one. It's good for me anyway. Visible results.
Good. Mm-hmm. I was going to say bottom line.
Bottom. Which is what?
Profits, I suppose, but it's sort of like everything has to move toward
some bottom line.
Objective.
Yes. Goal oriented.
I'd add recognition to visible results.
Yes. I'd also say bosses and employees. It's a hierarchy.
And politics.
Do you have security down?
Good.
Nope. Do we?
Nope.
You cut them off a lot.
Put it under common goals. Let's switch to family.
Okay, family.
Basic unit of society.
Love.
Caring. Nurturing.
Safe. Hugs.
Hugs.
Meals.
Meals.
Responsibility.
I missed the last one.
Responsibility.
After responsibility.
Cleaning.
Crying.
Cleaning. Crying.
Obvious.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Abuse.
I thought he said meals of abuse.
Always done.
Did we get that?
Yeah.
Can't see it.
A lot of those cross over.
Yeah.
Challenge, service.
Yeah. That takes us to our next point. I don't think I'm unusual in thinking that this is the way it worked. I grew up in what was the anomaly of the 50s. The first and real only generation where you had a working dad, a stay-home mom, and the 2.3 children or whatever it was. Dad was responsible for bringing in the income. He worked outside the home. That was his job. Mother's job was taking care of the house. The job that my sister and I had were being good children so we didn't embarrass our parents in public, and to study hard. That was our jobs. Not working that way anymore. I always think that it ought to be this way, that family ought to be comfort. It ought to be love. It ought to be nurturing and safe. But it's not always that way. And I guess I would like to use a little example, and that is vacation. We always think, oh, Holden, what a nice place, how restful. And it is, once you finally get here. But after about 10 days, I top out on the Holden experience. And last night, I really came to the end of a lot of short ropes. And I will tell you an experience I had last night. And I'm going to shower, and I'm going to go to bed. I'm really pooped. I will go to Vespers if I can go braless and in a bathrobe and slippers. And that's
that. I just can't handle it. I'm going to shower and go to bed. I got in the shower and I got half cleaned and all of a sudden there is a moth in there with me. Now that was really the last straw. I have been sat on by every fly in the Cascades. And I've got bites that woke me up in the middle of the night. And I'm standing there trying to get away from this moth who thought I might be a good safe place to land under all that water. And I've got a lady Bic in my right hand and trying to fight off this moth. And then he ended up on the floor of the shower. And I got out of that shower thinking, wait a minute, this is too much like work. We have a part of us that says work is where you work hard and you earn your money and you go home and we want to be comforted and cared for. And who's going to do it? Where's mom? When you're the mom, it's a lot harder. Suddenly, you're the one doing the nurturing and you say, who's going to take care of me? So let's look at the things that end up in both. Work is not all hard stuff. Family's not all easy stuff. There's a lot of nurturing and warm fuzzies that we can get from where we work. If we're not getting that where we work, then there's problems, but it can be done. I think we need to look at work as more of a as a more wholesome thing in many ways. And family, as Steve is fond of saying, as a small business in many ways, because it is. What do we have here that goes in both? Point them out to me because I can't see them.
Security.
We ended up with stress. I don't know where security went.
It's right there, under generations.
And do we have it here?
It's on the top, next to work.
Ah.
There's teamwork and cooperation. I think that's the same thing.
There's cooperation.
Right there.
What could be in family that's over here in work?
Routine.
Creative.
Politics.
Survival.
Politics.
Politics. Absolutely.
Vision.
French.
Hopefully. French.
Anybody that's ever done housework and had it come undone 5 minutes later when you clean up the kitchen and somebody goes, I'm hungry and monotony.
Addictions.
Friendship.
Family is the source of it.
Addictions? Oh, addictions of all kinds.
Demanding.
Visible results.
Negative.
Who gets visible results? I don't get any visible results.
The dishes get done,
yeah.
Common goals.
Lifestyle.
Community. Lifestyle. Contacts. Got any contacts?
Identity.
Your identity. Service, challenge, somebody said challenge. Deadlines, how many of us had to run to meet the ferry?
Survival.
Don't pass that car! No. We got to, we're going to miss the boat. Survival? I think we meant that in an economic sense.
Competition.
Yeah. It is stimulating.
Not a lot of profit,
but...
Not monetarily, but...
Emotionally,
other ways.
Recognition.
Boss employee, right?
Parent to boss.
For me, that at home fits because I'm single and I don't have family that lives with me. So when I am with family, I'm also not at home either.
Yeah. Okay. What about here?
Responsibility.
I've lost them all.
Responsibility.
I have the meals.
About halfway down the left-hand column there.
Oh, thank you.
Your head.
One of the reasons I work, and I passed the point where I work for fun, I now work to pay bills, is that I meet people that I never met at home. I think one of the big problems with the 50s family was that the mom was so very, very isolated. And I think that did a lot of damage to my mother, and I think it did a lot of damage to Steve's mother, and I think probably some of you would recognize that in your own families, that the moms were so isolated. And if they wanted to work, they were accused of being bad moms. So when I went to work, I got this. I made a lot of friends. I was a very lonely person for a long time before I did that. Anything else?
Decisions.
Oh, let's see.
That's where in the middle column of insecurity.
Okay. Painful? Anybody have a job where there's no visible results?
There are jobs like that.
There are plenty of jobs like that. I work in a nursing home.
Expensive also.
Expensive? Because you commute, you have to wear clothes that are decent. Mm-hmm.
No. Some jobs require a teaching.
Long term.
Constant change? Long term? Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Can be diverse variety mm-hmm.
job. I lost that one.
Lower left.
Teaching. Quite often in periods of
some of us are literal teachers.
Yeah.
Parties.
Parties. Yes.
It can be painful
at work. Yes, it can be painful.
Support.
Support.
Sometimes abuse.
It can. Yeah. Especially if you see yourself locked into a position you can't get out. Now most of us don't do laundry tomorrow. I've been known to shed a few tears.
Delegation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Some of the negative stuff works just as well there. Anyway, I think we've made a point. Does anybody have anything they want to comment on? Bill?
I think of a consultant, a psychologist that worked with family-owned businesses as a specialty. And he says that, I don't remember this for sure, that work maximizes changes, and just the opposite of family is to maximize stability or something to that effect. I don't quite. But he says it's really hard, and the stresses within families when you never leave the job and you have your family gathering and they're still talking business. I mean, where's the sanctuary? And then the inappropriate people that get in the jobs, but they're there. For instance, the one family. The boys stayed home and they learned on the job, and the girls were sent away to management school. They should have been running the company. But the tradition in the company said only males do it. And then also the addictions, the alcohol, et cetera, that as a result of not handling feelings, you couldn't cross over from family to home. So I think that, to me, that's an example of the bipolar types of needs that are met.
And one of the contentions in both of these books, and I'm sure of your own experience, is that the collapsing of work and family, it's not just in family businesses, but in other units, the tremendous rise, most faster than most people thought, of people who are not commuting anymore, they're home commuters, or whatever the phenomenon is called, home workers, where they're using computers, et cetera, and staying home at least one or two days a week, where work and family become the same experience. And the return of two people who work, both being at home together, it's there's no longer the separation of work and family. What we'd like to do is take some time, because we just began yesterday in Carol's session and some last night, is to talk about whether or not there are new models for family life. What is the new shape in which we try to deal with this collapsing or this relationship, this complex relationship between work and family life? What are some of the strategies and techniques and coping skills, as well as some of the larger public ways in which you as faithful people have tried to deal with that? And again, because this is so diverse, what we'd like to do is try to organize it by some areas of family life that, at least in our own experience, have been challenging, is a good way to put it. Why don't we start with housework? We were talking about the national statistics, which are rather interesting. Maybe we should see if anyone knows that. How many hours per day does the average working mother spend doing housework? Anyone know? Exclusive of childcare.
Is it five? Exclusive.
Exclusive of childcare.
Exclusive of childcare.
Yeah, it's 2 hours a day.
Yeah. That includes the weekends, that's right.
Yeah. Right.
2 hours per day, the average woman does.
Right, a working mother.
The working mother.
Right. Okay. And then for the working father, anyone know what it is?
By working, we're referring to working outside.
Outside the home, excuse me.
Half an hour.
These are
half an hour.
These are two parent families.
Right.
Yeah, not one parent family.
Right, and they are average statistics. It's 48 minutes. But one of the things that unfortunately we've learned is that somebody has to take care of the house. There are not little house fairies that come along and clean the house and take care of it while we're gone at work. What are some of the new ways that families that are living with the realities that we've talked about are dealing with that?
Hire a housekeeper.
Okay. Does that work well?
I did for a little while. But I'm a single parent.
Yeah.
So it was okay. But I found that I still get some things. So.
And it's very expensive.
Yes.
Automation.
Pardon?
Automation.
Automatic washers.
Irish, right?
Appliances.
Appliances. And they help?
Yeah, if you ever need to know what that
is. If you ring a washer.
If you ever used to ring a washer.
Yep. Pop every button off the first time through, right?
Well, I don't know in this house rule. Does that only include the laundry? That doesn't include the outside. Because in our house, I find my husband works at least as many hours as I do, and I think there's a lot more sharing of some of the traditional women. I mean, he'll cook if he gets home for dinner first, and so there's a lot more sharing of that.
Okay.
One of the things that Steve talked tonight and I talked about this morning was that in our family, he's often more willing to do more work than I am. He's our mm-hmm. toilet cleaner in the family. I do the laundry because I prefer to have my clothes come out.
I believe in the more the merrier approach. You just
let's get this done. And there's this trail behind him of lots of never mind. Anyway, but there's also
one person.
Yes, lower standards. I'm
lower
for
standards. That. Yeah, who's got the higher standards and who's got the lower standards? But there's always somebody in charge. And Steve is more than willing to do anything. Just tell me what you want me to do. Mm-hmm. Which means, well, it's two things. One, there's a good part to that. That means I get to be the big cheese. I get to be the chief. Well, this is what you do. But it also means I have to do the work of organizing. And most women see the big picture, and it's big. Whereas guy goes, oh, hey, I can do that. You know, and it's one job done. Let's go. And I am haunted by everything that I left behind. Or that's sort of following me along in the back of my mind. It also means that because women sort of see the big picture still and tend to want to have it all done, that the guy ends up being the schlub who is sort of the hired hand around the house. And that's not good for the ego either. And that's I think that's the problem with sharing this.
I think it's worked best when we've made lists. We forced ourselves to sit down and make a list and then divvy it up. Somehow that process of sitting down and listing those things out equalizes some of the control issues. But yeah.
Another aspect of housework, you can minimize your investment capital by buying an older house, and then you have a lot of whatever you want to call it, fixing up, maintenance stuff that men, I think, tend to do and direct the women, which is just the reverse. Mm. The men say, okay, you've got to buy this kind of paint, you can scrape it. No, you can't do it that way. You've got to do it this way. And the woman, if she's able to deal with that, will come along with it. And frequently, you can't afford to pay someone unless it's a college student or something.
Yeah. Here, hold this wrench for 2 hours.
Yeah.
We'll find
it.
Involving the kids, if you have kids.
Ah, good.
When they're little, sometimes that's more work for the parents. Mm-hmm.
But they need to learn.
Yeah.
Living at a different scale. And you don't need 3,000 square feet for three people.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then when the person said lower standards, mm-hmm. in my thought, that wasn't meaning that you didn't want things as clean, but maybe mm-hmm. it means that you don't have to have your windows washed every week and you don't have to have your carpets cleaned every week. Well, if you live with my mother, she was washing. I mean, her house was clean.
Sheets are iron.
Floor. Yeah. Yeah.
Hubby's underwear is iron.
That's right. And so
that's because there's that so-called housewife spends 5 hours a day doing housework. So there's obviously more time to spend.
That's right.
Okay. let's just try to, because obviously there's lots of stuff, but let's take a next switch. How are you dealing with meals? I mean, half of all food now is bought as fast food or prepared food. So that's one way in which people are coping. Are there other ways in which people are coping with the fact of families have to eat?
Make a big meal and then just eat it all.
Okay, that's a good idea. So one big meal and then eat it in portions during the week.
Simpler meals.
You don't talk about breakfast and supper, you eat lunch at work or work or something. I take it with you, so we only talk about 2 meals a day.
Okay.
Ruth makes a huge meal on Sunday, and I make a huge casserole on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And then those two then become kind of eat off those all.
Eat off?
Okay.
Double the recipe and then freeze half. Yeah.
I missed one that came in. Always
Simpler meals.
Crock pots are great.
Assign
the kids 1 day and they pick the meal, they pick what they're going to make for dinner. And then it might be pancakes, it might be eggs, it might be, but you give them a day and they're in charge of that meal.
Yeah. In our house, we ran up against, again, the old standards. Why isn't there a salad here? We have to have a salad and cook vegetable. What do you mean? We don't need that. Here's a piece of meat,
You grab your sandwich off the way to baseball practice, so you can get to the next thing.
Meal planning is a big part of that. Mm-hmm. Planning
takes a lot of time.
And one way to cope with that I found was to make all your menus up on 3x5 cards and just pull them out before you go shopping. And that, then your meals are already planned and your whole menu is planned in advance.
That's great.
With computers, a lot of people do that on computers. Yeah. Plan in a whole month, and then they just start again at the end of the month.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I was going to say, a problem with kids cooking is that if they want to make tacos or something, they have to go to their parents and say, well, I need this, and then, but if it's not, I think shopping is also a big part.
Yes,
that takes just as long as
planning and shopping.
I used to love shopping for groceries because I didn't work and I didn't have any money for anything else. But when I got to the store, I got to spend money. And I didn't have a lot to spend, but it was the only thing I got to do around the house. And I used to love it. Used to. Past tense.
I have to admit, meals, I feel guiltier in not having them done right than I do the housework for some reason. It's a harder thing for me to get over in my daily schedule.
Well, I don't think meals is something we necessarily have to feel we got to get over. Because it's absolutely crucial that we somehow maintain decent eating habits. And the problem with getting home, both commuters, both working at 6 p.m., if you're like me, I get hungry, I attack anybody within sight. And who's going to cook? You're exhausted. You haven't seen the kids. You don't even bother saying hello to each other, let alone your kids. It's, look at this kitchen, and I forgot to thaw this, So it is a problem, and it's going to continue to be, but it's absolutely essential that we find some way to deal with it, because the health habits and the eating habits of this country are, for the most part, pretty bad. As Lutherans, I would say we do much better, but...
How about microwave ovens?
Yeah. Appliances.
Yeah.
That makes a big difference.
It's therapeutic for me, actually, in coming home from work a lot of times. It's relaxing.
What?
Cooking.
Can be able to chop up the vegetables.
Where do you live?
Something I was going to do was cooperative eating. Four of us were going to exchange every Wednesday night. We just
go to
each other's house. But the planning has gotten in the way. We've never gotten enough.
Jeff?
I think to have... hors d'oeuvre kind of thing, where you get home and it's actually planned, a glass of wine, you sit down, you munch out on something, and gradually get into the mood. I think that that's also spiritual. It's spiritually important to have a sort of break time.
Right, that's a good.
And it's nice to sit down and just talk together and not have to prepare food and wait for food. put out some chips and some cheese or some celery maybe, and a beer. You know, just sort of sit around for half an hour thinking, oh, how do things go?
Does that work with kids? How would you do it with kids?
You don't have children.
No.
Games are at 6:15.
Yeah.
Okay.
But still, great idea. I like it.
It's still a good idea to try to work in as you can.
I think that's neat for adults, and mm-hmm. if you don't have an evening meeting, you have to go right
away. Kids are time bombs. They you know, 1 minute before they're starved, they are not hungry.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I am starved, and I got to have it right now.
Used to call it dinner the arsenic hour.
The arsenic, yes.
But I think he makes a good point, and I really wish we could find a way to handle that with families.
Well, yeah, even like with the kids, though, like even if you've got something set up like for when they, like my problem is my kids get home from school at 4, I don't get home till 5. By the time I get there, they have already devoured. And even if I make a big meal, they're already too full to eat it. So then you think, no, why bother?
Yeah.
So that kind of thing would be a good idea for them. I mean, they could have that, fruit or whatever.
Do your kids like wine?
Jeff is real helpful here. You need to write a book on parenting, Jeff.
When we get into this is something that bothers me. Something else besides having a working mother that didn't happen in the 50s was we did not have organized soccer. We did not have organized basketball. My parents didn't try to develop my talents because they didn't have any. And we just went home.
You hung out.
Came home and read the paper. And we weren't running all over, you know, trying to get to here and there in this game and that game. And this is another thing that adds to our frantic lifestyle. It's not just because mom works, but it's because the kids have these jobs all of a sudden. You know, they've got to get to the soccer game. This one's over here at baseball and, you know, piano lessons and this and that. Yeah.
And, we have a section on relaxation.
Yeah, well, it's not just mom not being there.
Let's make the switch. The third area we wanted to talk about was the whole area of recreation, entertainment, and free time. Are there new ways, new models for families to deal with those issues? You're saying that much of it's over-organized. What's the solution to that?
Moving off is stressful. You know?
A lot of families aren't really getting family time because they have so many kids in different places at different times. This is just for kids. They never see each other. So getting them all together is really rare.
Yeah.
I think sometimes when people come home from work or vacation, or they go on vacation, they try to do too much. Like say, oh, I'm off now. I need to... You know, I need to relax. They try too hard to have fun and relax.
You can't just hang out.
You're not.
People are afraid of bored children. I mean, when I was young, it was okay to be bored for a little. I mean, it's syndrome, hurried child syndrome, that fits into all that too. It's a real, I think it's a real problem. I'm a daycare provider, so this is mine.
Yes.
Anyways, I think it is a real crisis happening right now.
Well, kids don't ever have time to lay on the grass, look at the clouds, you know, just think, because you know they're in all this organized.
Everything's organized.
Yeah, but that's fine. It just kills me though to see the kids have nothing to do on a weekend, hanging out at malls.
Well, yeah.
And so there's got to be. Yeah. And our philosophy is we want to keep them so busy and active that they don't have time to get into trouble.
Well, and that's the other
and
difference.
And we don't live in an area with lots of kids around, and so we have to provide the opportunity for them to interact at a recreational level, and it's through organized sports or piano.
I was going to ask if we, with a Sesame Street generation or two that raised, where there is a new stimulus every 6 seconds on the screen, if we haven't raised a generation that has to be constantly stimulated, and as somebody mentioned that it's okay to be bored, because boredom is the step before creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that same tension. As soon as I think, hold it, I'm home, and I'm not playing with the boys, right, or they do not have of our magnitude, I better go and create a circus, you know, or create an event. And then I catch myself and say, oh, it's all right for them to get creative with on their own. And that's not for them, and that's not neglect. And so maybe I don't need to have a constant circus or 16 events going on.
I think television is terribly inappropriate as a pastime for children. Very inappropriate, because it does turn them into spectators. And also our choice of toys for our children are do not give them a chance to manipulate them and create with them. Really careful what you buy your kids.
Mm-hmm. Altered state of consciousness. TV.
TV is
it's
an
addiction. Mm-hmm.
So it's computer games.
It's a feeling without
it. Yeah.
Jeff.
There's another comment from the single quarter. I know
good.
That's
helpful.
About children, but it seems to me that there's an attitude that parents need to entertain children instead of children need to emulate parents. And I've always thought and hoped that it would be possible at a certain point in a child's life to have them sit at a table and observe a conversation perhaps that they don't entirely understand, and observe the passion and dedication to observe these things and to be not in awe of them, but to that somehow goofing off for adults can also mean being serious about and passionate about ideas or passionate about movements and stuff like that. And children brought along into that, it can be a gift for them. If mom's a potter, for example, wouldn't it be possible for the child to see that and for the two of them to do something of that together as part of that you don't have to create a goofing off environment, that it can be part of your passion as a person?
I think parents need to be involved in other things besides just work and just kids.
Yeah.
I think children need to learn what you need to learn, that there's a world out there and that they are a part of it and that they have a responsibility to their environment and their fellow people. And that's exactly what that does.
I'm just afraid that the children hold us hostage, and I don't know why that's happened. That somehow when the child cries, we immediately have to change what we're doing instead of saying to the child, what I am doing is important. And you can go off and do whatever you can find to do, but I'm not necessarily going to change. I mean, if you want to go in the other room and play, that's fine, but we're having a serious conversation. I'm sure you all do that at some point.
It depends on the age.
Yeah.
But the thing that worries me is we're creating a generation, and we're from a generation of people that can't stand to be alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did have every need met.
I think, for me, that's one of the strategies of families being strengthened and being entertained is not feeling the need to do it always together. Mm-hmm. That it's okay for one parent or one child or one segment of the family to go off and be alone for a period of time to pursue that.
I think the primary caregiver needs excess energy. You know, and how do you get that in this kind of environment? They did a study of parents, families in California. The most destructive characteristic on the part of the primary caregiver was irritability. Get out of my way, you know. Mm. Go do that. You know, you're bothering me. You know, type of thing. Irritability.
Well, that leads
impatience.
That leads to the last of the four biggies for us, and that is fatigue. Mm. Mm. Nobody's ending up feeling cared for, nurtured, loved. There is a sense in our family, and I think in others, that at some point you are just stretched really thin.
But parents have rights too. And I think we've forgotten about that.
But I think that the whole fatigue issue, or the sense of exhaustion that seems to permeate many families, is not just related to the parents, but also to the children. I don't know in those of you that teach, but the teachers I talk to talk about kids being tired in school. What are some of the strategies that folks are using to combat that sense of fatigue and exhaustion? Are there...
And burnout. I don't know the way to call it.
What kind of things can we do? That change
it. From a single perspective, too. But
that's
it's amazing to me that I watch my sister, who's a single mom,
yeah.
and I know her life is really, really busy. But what's been amazing to me is, as a single person, I've done the same thing to my life.
Mm-hmm.
I've pulled back on that lately, but I was to a point where I was so tired and I was so stressed out because I was filling my life up too much, you know,
mm-hmm.
and it got to be an addiction. Work got to be an addiction. For me, even exercise can get to be an addiction if I'm not careful. And I had to start taking a look at giving myself permission to not exercise every day and maybe go every other day, or to just leave work even though the work wasn't already done. So, you know, maybe it's something that's so much in our culture anyway that I did it as a single person just as much as I saw my sister doing it with her kids.
Other, yes, please.
One thing that has helped me reduce fatigue is to try to alter my standards or try to be good enough instead of almost perfect.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, I try for perfect, but I know that's impossible, so I say almost perfect. But good enough, I like that standard. In fact, I even tell myself, hey, today's my day to be not perfect. Today I'm going to be average, and that's hard work for me sometimes.
My mother always said, if it's worth doing well. Yeah. We know that thing with messages.
Yeah.
And I, years later, as an adult, I heard an older woman say, my mother always told me it was worth doing at all. It's worth doing well. And she says, well, phooey. She says, this is only a bed. Throw the sheets up. Throw the blankets up. Put the pillows on it for crying out loud and get on to something else. And she's right. She's right. Everything is not worth doing really well.
Others?
Yeah. Well, I think it's partially how the family's organized. You can tell, you know, out in a shop or wherever, serving other families, that their kids are all their behaviors and so on, and how they, you know, do things for other people. That's important, I think, to being not being fatigued and burnt out. Is how you work on it. You know, about what the kids do. What's their responsibilities? They have an allowance. What do they have to do to, you know, what they do? All that is a matter of organization.
Okay.
So that you don't have some of this.
Okay. So being organized. Yes, Chip.
What does that say? No hugs.
No hugs available.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say that, again, speaking from the East Coast and probably California perspective, single perspective, therapy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we wouldn't survive without our friendly therapists. It costs us a lot of money, keeps the economy going, keeps the insurance companies going, and they help us to deal.
Okay.
Okay, you could have support groups, which are not costly.
Yes.
For young kids who have to be somewhere 8 to 10 hours a day, I really feel that less structure helps fatigue. If they have more time to just play, interact with each other.
Yeah, it's interesting that Americans are really sleeping the same number of hours. So it's not that we're depriving ourselves of sleep. It's that what we're doing in the hours that we're awake that is creating this sense of exhaustion and fatigue.
And it's a mental fatigue.
You know, the relaxation response, you know, taking time to relax, which is freedom from stimulation and freedom from thinking. It's not sleeping. There's a difference between relaxation and sleeping.
Okay.
I think the kids are getting enough sleep a lot of times, but they've got so much stimulation that they have, there's no relaxation.
I used to love the childbirth classes because it was probably stressful for Jan, but it was great for me. All that breathing, and it's just, I was relaxed by the time those were over. Yes, was there a comment in the back?
Go ahead.
Oh.
Well, I think it's important to remember that we don't have to give our kids everything they want, everything they need. For several years now, probably say it safely since we're just gone, we've gotten, I need this, I need that, I gotta have this, I gotta have this. There's enormous pressure on us to do for our kids what our parents did for us. And you don't have to do that. You do have to limit the TV that the children can watch, and therefore you have to limit the TV that you watch. It is one of the things that Steve and I found really valuable is to just let the dishes sit for 20 minutes, 10 minutes, and read to the kids. Now, we didn't start doing that until they were teenagers, and I think last year was when we really did it seriously, and the kids were in the 9th and 12th grades, and they all went, oh, well, one of the things you need to do is ignore your kids when they go, oh, for heaven's sake, this is so stupid, and do it anyway. What do you mean we have to get up on Saturday morning and go for a walk? We don't want to go for a hike. We have lots of parks in the East Bay where we're from around San Francisco. And we drag them out. We're going to go for a hike. They love it now. And they've learned things that they would never have learned. But we are so sensitive to their criticism and what they're sure they're not going to like that we don't do it. And we need to do that. If it would be fun for us to do and good for our fatigue, it's good for the kids. Forget the whining. Do it anyway.
The last section we wanted to deal with was, are there things that the church or our congregations can do to assist us to make that relationship between our personal life, our life outside, our family, in the broadest definition of family? Earlier when we talked about baby boomers, I argued that the church needed to have a new definition of family that included single people, that included single parents, that included blended families. So in that broader definition of family, what can the church do to assist you in that, making that connection between work and family?
I think they're doing it partially with all youth programs they have, I mean, that's, and spring thing, and Sunday school, and so on. I mean, that's all, it's all basic now, but that is part of strengthening family.
Good.
Youth programs to bring families together. I think they're so segmented a lot of times they keep families apart rather than bring them together.
I mean, that's not the goal, all by age.
And we do a lot of that at Holden here, too.
You know, that's not the goal, is it?
What does anyone think about it? What is the goal?
Well, maybe that's what we need is youth programs that bring it together.
Yeah. Where's the intergenerational?
Jeff.
This is retreats.
Retreats?
We do have a program in our congregation. It's called Family Circle, and it does bring the whole family together and all the children who want, you know, who can attend at different age levels for a potluck dinner once a month activities. And we found that that has given them a feeling of family within the congregation, and that's been a real good nurture for our kids.
Yeah, in a lot of congregations, you find that people have raised their families, they've dealt with kids, and they really don't want to have any more to do with it. But there are families that really, really, really need the support of other families. There aren't a lot of kids on today.
Yesterday, we talked about babysitting cooperatives, whether or not the church could take some leadership in trying to establish those so that people who do have children, both dual-career families and single-parent families, have a resource.
We have that at our church called Mother's Morning Out, and all the moms with little kids especially bring their kids to church once a week, and one of the moms or two stay with where the rest of them go and get things done, get errands taken care of.